All right, good morning, members and members of the public and the members of the Capital Investment Committee. We have an amazing program today, all related to PFAS. So we get to see exactly what big business has done to the state of Minnesota. It's going to be so exciting. And I mean that sarcastically. With that said, we're just waiting for our testifier who came in from Michigan. So thank you so much. I met her at the Great Lakes Legislative Conference where Representative Hansen and I went. And I thought I would just attend because, well, you know, PFAS is in a lot of our drinking waters. And we are spending a lot of money to clean up drinking water across the state of Minnesota. And the presentation that Ms. Sandy Wynn gave was eye-opening, to say the least. And Rick Hansen and I, Representative Hansen and I, had a lot of conversation about that. But while they're getting that computer ready, I want to also let you know about a very important thing that is happening this month. It is my birthday month, along with Representative Hansen's. And we share March 1st as our day. And today we chose to celebrate you, or us, with all of you on the committee, and we have picked up scones for your benefit. So while we're waiting for Ms. Wynn to get the computer going, Representative Hansen will make sure the treats. Rep, do you have something to say?
And these are mini scones in a variety of flavors. I've been told to make sure I note that they are chocolate chip with caramel on them rather than raisins. But there are blueberries and raspberries and other assorted ones from Black Sheep Coffee in South St. Paul.
Fantastic. And do we have towels for that as well, paperware?
They're supposed to be.
Okay. While we're waiting, Representative Scraba, do you have anything you'd like to get off your chest right now before we start?
$300 million a year for PFA. Thank you.
Okay. How about Representative Carroll? Do you have anything you'd like to speak into the microphone before we start? Get it off your chest. Oh, your mouth is full. Got it. Okay. Who's my other frequent flyer do we got going on here? Oh, Representative Sexton, do you have anything to add?
So we are working through SROG on some PFAS removal technology that originally started out as working on biodiesel, and they were able to reapply it to actually shoot low voltage electricity through water to target the PFAS and actually break it up and destroy it. So then in the process of expanding upon that technology.
Very
so
interesting.
By next year, we will have a testifier that can talk about it.
Okay, great. Thank you for that. Oh, Representative Allen, how about you?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would also echo the same thing that Representative Sexton talked about. It was that blue plasma product is something that's pretty revolutionary. It looks like it has a lot of promise. And to Tom, Representative Sexton's point, it would definitely be worth something, worth digging into that a little bit more as far as what the impact potentially could have here in Minnesota with a Minnesota-made and Minnesota-created product that could help break this down and clean up our environment. So thank you.
Thank you. I look forward to hearing more about that. Representative Lilly, do you have anything you'd like to get off your chest?
No, I believe I'm all right. Make sure you fill out the hockey forms for if you're interested. You can vote against Koznick's team.
Perfect.
Okay.
For the state high school hockey tournament.
Oh, good times. Representative Ryer, how about you?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a hearty recommendation on the berry scones.
I got one in front of me. Representative Frederick, how about for you? You got nothing to add? You said it all in HHS? I was hoping you could bring some of that fire to this committee today. Okay. Chair Lee?
I'm just going to wing it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just want to wish you and Chair Hansen a very belated birthday. Happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you. Chair Koznick? Okay. Well, Vice Chair Fogelman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Happy birthday, and go wild.
Are we set? Computer's fixed?
You're asking a boomer about technology. I've had the best minds I know try to work on it, and we're missing a cable of some type. So,
is there a cable on the way?
Hopefully.
Okay.
We thought maybe we could just start.
Okay, we'll just start then.
I hate
then.
To take up your time. So.
Okay, all right. Members, then shall we begin? Okay, Ms. Nguyen, you have the floor.
Thank you. Thank you all for inviting me here today. It's really quite an honor, but, you know, from the Midwest, if someone calls and invites you over, you certainly come. I just feel bad I didn't bring cookies. Thank you for letting me be here. My name is Sandy Nguyen Stelt, and I'm a co-chair of the Great Lakes PFAS Action Network. I am actually not an activist. I'm a psychologist by training. I'm not an environmental scientist. I don't do any of that. But I think I can represent and tell you my story that will help, I hope, drive what policy decisions that you make in the future. I think everybody who gets involved in government work does it with the best of intentions and wanting to do the best for their constituents. I don't believe any of you are doing it for fame and fortune here. You're doing it because you want to make your state and your community better. And so I think hearing from constituents, even if it's from across the lake, will be helpful to you. My story starts probably before many people were born. My husband Joel and I met in 1987. Joel was a social worker at the time, and I worked in a day program for people with disabilities. I thought he was cute. He ignored me, and then he got a different job. A year later, he called me out of the blue, and I remember saying to him, what made you decide to ask me out? And he said, well, I made a list of 10 women I thought I could see myself with, and you were number 5 on the list. And the first 4 turned me down. He didn't have good game, let's just put it that way. Well, let me keep going. What I did value, though, was that kind of transparency and honesty. And so Joel and I got married. In 1991, we bought our first home in Belmont, so we bring our maps with us when we travel. Belmont is just north of Grand Rapids, and we loved that home. He was a social worker who investigated child abuse. I was a psychologist at that time. We pretty much hated people, and so we really wanted to be in an area that's full of woods. We were surrounded by nature. Across the street was a 40-acre Christmas tree farm, which was just heaven. And we lived there for 25 very dull years. And that's what life should be, just living with each other and enjoying our time. In 2016, we were getting ready to celebrate our 25th wedding anniversary. Joel was having some stomach problems, and he went in for some surgery. Actually, the surgery was 10 years ago today. They thought they were going to repair a hernia, and instead he came out and was diagnosed with stage 4 liver cancer, and Joel died 3 weeks after that surgery. And I was devastated. We did not see that coming, and it was devastating to us, to me. And it's through your faith and your friends and your family that you get through that. It was the following year that our Department of Environmental Quality came to my door and asked if they could test my drinking water. Now, keep in mind, in Michigan, this was 2017, we were going through the Flint water crisis. And for those of you who don't know, that was under the Snyder administration. Flint had switched water sources. It was horribly contaminated with lead. I assumed our Department of Environmental Quality was just very sensitive to the need for clean water. They came and tested my water for PFAS. They came 3 days later and were wearing hazmat suits, which was a little disconcerting, but it was out of concern about cross-contamination. They arrived 2 weeks later to give me the results, and at that time, the PFAS in my drinking water tested at 24,000 parts per trillion. It's tested as high as 80,000 parts per trillion at times. It turned out that that Christmas tree farm that we loved actually had been property that is owned by Wolverine Worldwide, which is the shoe company. They make a variety of shoes. They make very, very good shoes, unfortunately. And they had proprietary rights to Scotchgard and were waterproofing the shoes. That tannery waste had to be dumped somewhere, so they dumped it on those 40 acres of land, along with other places within our community. They dug trenches to dump that in quite deep, and when it would bubble to the surface, they would punch the natural clay underlining there so it would flow into the aquifer. That had contaminated probably 30 square miles of our community, most of which are on private wells, and contaminated our community from that. So that began this journey of figuring out what we're going to do about that, because at the time it dawned on me, how does this happen? How do we contaminate our drinking water and allow people to drink it without knowing? Because it not just contaminated private wells, it contaminated municipal well systems as well that were pulling drinking water up. I want to make sure, I don't know how much people know about PFAS. I'm guessing you know a fair amount, given what's going on. But as you know, this is a class of chemicals that were developed in the 40s. It started out as just this really brilliant piece of technology. It's waterproof. It's virtually indestructible. You can't burn it, you can't dilute it, you can't destroy it. It lasts forever, which in manufacturing and in products is an amazing thing to do. Much like the dinosaurs in Jurassic Park were amazing to watch, and we all wanted to go there until we figured out that that probably wasn't the safest plan. The challenge I think we have right now is that it's a very complex mixture of chemicals. It used to be we were most worried about the long chain carbons, but now they're developing at a rapid rate, and we know that these bioaccumulate in wildlife and humans. We know that they travel throughout the environment. While they can be very useful, they can also be very toxic to humans and to wildlife. And so I think that becomes this ongoing battle, right, between weighing benefits versus risks. They're in so many products right now, so many products. Pesticides, which means they're on your food. They're in wrapping. They're in hygiene products. They're in makeup. They're in firefighting foam. They're in dental floss, cookware. All of these things are finding that it's incredibly useful to have. However, while they may stay in those products, I would challenge that eventually all products have an end of life cycle, and that means they end up in some type of landfill. And when they end up in a landfill, they leachate into water, or they end up in your wastewater, which means they go somewhere. And I think that's the quandary that every state right now is finding themselves in, is what do we do with this? I think the other challenge that we have is, while we know a lot about what we call the legacy PFAS, PFOA, PFOS, all of those. They're the part that the Dark Waters movie was part of, right? There's 14,000 different PFAS chemicals right now. And I think to expect there to be science on each and every one of those 14,000 to determine their safety is probably a bit absurd. And I think, frankly, in my opinion, it's probably pretty dangerous to expect. We don't allow medications to be on the market until we demonstrate that they're safe to ingest. And so I don't know why we would allow chemicals to be on the market that we don't know if they're safe to ingest, because at some point we're ingesting these. As I said, I'm not a chemist, but I'm happy to talk about that. We have a lot of health effects that we know are connected to this class of chemicals. cholesterol problems, liver damage, thyroid damage, kidney cancer, low birth weights. We know that in children there's problems, and adults, they're endocrine disruptors. They result in thyroid disease. Children will have a lower response rate to vaccines, which means if you have children that have this in them, they will need their vaccines checked and updated regularly. We know that they result in low birth weights. I was just reading a study about women who have contamination in them while they're trying to breastfeed will not be able to produce adequate breast milk. They have low birth weights. The list goes on, and we're learning more and more as science is there.
Ms. Nguyen, as you talk about the science that you're discussing here, do you have like studies and stuff to back up the comments, just so that the public is aware and knows that it's just not your words, but we have studies that actually back up what you're saying?
Yes, I can certainly gift you those reports. I didn't bring those with me, but the C8 study is full of these, and I can certainly present you with volumes of other studies.
Okay, thank you.
But I have to be honest, most of these are on the longer chain because they've been around longer and they've been tested more.
Okay.
So
we just want to make sure the public is aware that information is giving accurate and not just hyperbole just for the drama.
This is not Facebook information for you.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you for clarifying that. So as a result of this, PFAS is throughout our environment. It's a huge issue in firefighting foam and firefighting gear. And as a result, we find more cancer incidents in firefighters than one would hope to have. It's also very common to have it among military bases where AFFF firefighting foam has been used. We have a lot of it in consumers' goods, obviously. And as a result, that's getting into our drinking water. It's also getting into our wastewater, which many states are using for biosolids, which means it's being spread on fields. And in Michigan, we have actually had farmers that have lost their farms because biosolids have been thrown on fields that have either contaminated the dairy or contaminated the product that they sell. And so Maine is doing a lot of work on how to manage biosolids in the environment as well. So back to my story. I lose my husband. I find out that I have these incredibly high levels in my water, as does everybody in my community. And the first thing that people want to know from that is, how much is in your blood? Somebody came to you and said you had carbon monoxide poisoning. You'd want to know how much is in your blood. And I went and got my blood tested, which back in 2017 was not easy. There was one lab in California that did that. It costs $800 out of pocket. Blood testing is not covered by most people's insurance right now for PFAS. Because they will say there's no reason to test because there's nothing you can do about it. But I did it anyway, because I'm just that gal. I got my blood levels back, and I want to be clear here. All of us have this in us, which should upset you. The amount that the EPA came by with for a health advisory level is zero. Most people in America, 95% of the population, will have somewhere between 2 and maybe 10 nanograms per milliliter in your blood. Mine came back at 5,000 nanograms per milliliter in my blood because I had been drinking it for so long and it bioaccumulated. I took that to my doctor, who looked rather shocked and wasn't sure what to do about it. But we decided we would do this watchful waiting. We knew it was connected to certain disease processes. The ATSDR has come out with those disease processes that I went through. And so we decided we would check my liver, we would check my kidneys, we would check my thyroid, we would do all that. In 2020, I started having problems with my throat. We checked a bunch of innocuous things. And my doctor said, where but for these crazy PFAS levels, I think you should get an ultrasound of your thyroid. I was found to have thyroid cancer that had metastasized into my lymph nodes. And so I went in and had my thyroid removed and 23 lymph nodes. And if it were not for the fact that I had these blood levels checked, I would not have known that I had that. Eventually, luckily thyroid cancer is very curable, and I'm 5 years free of cancer now, so that's worth celebrating. But I give a lot of credit to the fact that I was very assertive on my medical care. But it's not just me. Other people in my community have had this as well. I think you have a picture of two young boys, Jack and Bruce, who are neighbors. Jack was 2 years old when we learned about this. When he was four, his mom had his blood tested, and he was found to have 465 nanograms per milliliter in his blood as a child. He's had the highest levels of any child. He has some developmental delays. He's also a very gifted artist, but his vaccines don't work. And so every year he's got to go in and have his vaccines checked and updated and have them repeated, as does his younger brother. You can imagine right now, that's kind of terrifying, and it was very terrifying during COVID for this family. So I bring this up because these are real-world problems that your constituents are going to be facing with this. So many people are getting contaminated through their water that may not know. They may not know how to go get it tested, and they may not know what, they may not see this coming. I never saw this coming. I think government's responsibility is to protect the health and well-being of their citizens. And this is one way that I think we have to look at doing this. So my thoughts as a community member who's worked very hard in Michigan on this, we tested every municipal water system in 2018 within our state, and we have an ongoing system of testing public utilities and water within our state for PFAS. Granted, it is only, I believe, 6 or 8 of the PFAS out of 14,000, so we only have 13,992 that could be out there that we're not looking for, but it's a start. We were able to do that and do that quite successfully. We found several areas that had very high levels, though. Ann Arbor, Benton Harbor, Parchment, to name a few of township systems. My township system, Plainfield Township, had very high levels in it as well, that then had to put in granular activated carbon filters or reverse osmosis filters that are quite costly to maintain. It's a fact. You can't expect to charge people to buy water that's going to poison them. That makes no sense. So when you are in a situation as a state, I feel like you have to be honest about what you know and what you don't know. And then you have to listen to citizens. People are going to be angry and scared when they hear about this. I think you guys have been very proactive about this, though, more so than even my state in some ways. I would strongly encourage there be some system in place where people could get PFAS testing paid for, blood testing paid for. We're working on a bill within Michigan. I'm working with Senator Huizenga, who's our Republican senator, on getting that done, especially in children. Keep in mind, if you test infants' bloods, you're getting a 2-for-1 because infants were not out drinking bottles of Scotch Guard. They got that from their mother's blood, and so you will also know if mother. I would strongly encourage you guys to go and get your blood tested. I think it would be really eye-opening for you to see how much PFAS is in your blood, and I think it would give you a sense of what other communities could do. I think anybody on private wells within our country probably needs to have their water tested. Drinking contaminated water is a primary pathway to getting exposed to this. And so the best course of action is to be able to know what you're drinking. Safe water is a very basic human right. I was at the United Nations just last year talking about this, that drinking safe water and affordable water is a basic human right. I think the number one thing we have to look at doing is turning off the tap. And you guys have been leaders in the country on this, so I commend you for your work on Amara's Law. That has been amazing to watch what you've done with that. I think I know that people are working towards having exemptions and things carved out of that. I would challenge you on that. I think there are going to be times that we have things that have to have PFAS in them. I don't want someone not to get a heart valve replacement because we don't have an adequate way to do that right now. My mascara can run off my face for right now. I don't need that done, right? I don't need it in my makeup. I don't need it in my clothing. And it's not because I eat my makeup. It's not because I eat my waterproof shoes. It's because my waterproof shoes end up in a landfill. Yes.
Ms. Nguyen, that kind of showcases here for our makeup. You know, majority of us women put some sort of product on our face. And are there any states that have labeling requirements that say may contain PFAS?
You jumped right ahead in my presentation. Thank you. Part of that is labeling. We have no way. If you've tried to find out what's in there, it is like a Where's Waldo of chemicals, because it's not a labeling requirement anywhere. And so when we have these product bans, which I think are going to be what we need to do, it also makes it challenging for manufacturers and companies to know, have people really followed the rules and banned this? We have some private groups that are doing some testing on this. They're literally pulling products off the shelf to test to see if it's really in there. And the good news is oftentimes people are following the rules and it's not there. But we don't have a way to know that. But as long as we allow products to be made with these 14,000 chemicals, this class of chemicals in there, we're going to be throwing bad money after good. There's no other way to describe it. This problem is just going to continue to grow and grow and grow, and you're going to be faced with this. Again, I want the submarines that are out in the Middle East right now to have nothing but the best AFFF firefighting foam. And if that has PFAS in it, I'm willing to do that to save our military's lives right now, while we look for better replacements. But I'm not willing to let people put it in every product under the sun, just so that, frankly, it makes our lives easier and that we can make a profit. My grandmother cooked without Teflon pans for years, and I'll tell you, she cooked circles around me. And I remember scrubbing those cast iron pans and saying, I hate these. And she'd say, well, that's where all the love is, though, and you still had to scrub it. So we all survived. Yes, ma'am.
That reminds me of the cast iron pans growing up. My stepmom would have, you know, wash those dishes, and after potatoes and stuff, it would just be like, I hate it, hate it. But you know what I use now? Cast iron pans. And
exactly.
The secret, my friends, is make sure you're seasoning your cast iron pan.
Somehow we figured it out before. Yes. So I think there's a lot of products that we could look at. And I think the market, frankly, is starting to work towards that. I think we're seeing the market correct itself out of concerns about legal things. Yes.
Representative Carroll.
Thank you, Chair. I thought you weren't supposed to wash cast iron. I thought you were supposed to season it.
No, you can wash your cast iron pans, but you want to make sure that you're drying your cast iron pans. So I put it on my stove, dry, evaporate that water out, and then I lightly season with some oil. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Chair.
You're welcome.
It's very important that got on the record, too, because I don't want people screwing up their cast iron pans. So thank you for pointing that out.
That's right. We want to make sure everything that we put, PFAS and cooking skills
That's
on the record.
That's right. We don't want any bad information out of here. Another area I'm very concerned about that's becoming a bigger and bigger issue is PFAS chemicals in farming and in agriculture. And I'm worried for two reasons. One, none of us want it in our land and in our food and in our livestock. But two, I'm very worried about what this does to farmers in seeing what has happened to farmers in the state of Michigan, in New Mexico, and in Maine, where farmers have literally lost generational farms and livelihoods because of putting biosolids and whatnot into that. Is very concerning to me. So I think we need to figure out a system where we protect farmers before we encourage farmers to start testing, because there's not a farmer around right now that will test for this knowing that they're going to lose their farms. Figuring out a system of managing biosolids and making sure biosolids are safe before we use those will be very important.
Representative Allen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just for a point of clarification for the people that are watching the testimony, could you just kind of dive into, I'm familiar, very familiar with biosolids and our use of it within in the agriculture world and some of the concerns we have, but could you just kind of explain that to the people that are possibly watching at home? Thank you.
Yes, so as a good city girl, I will try to explain the best that I can. Biosolids, my understanding, are taking wastewater treatment and using that as compost, basically, as fertilizer that we spread onto fields. And it's a very cost-effective system because we have too much wastewater stuff and we need fertilizer for fields. So it felt like another one of those, aha, this is great. The problem is if you have industry in other places taking contaminated PFAS-laden chemicals and putting that into the wastewater, then it gets into the biosolids and then it gets spread onto fields. So it's by no fault of the farmer. And that, I think, is very important. It's by no fault of anybody. It's just what's happening. And so I think it's really important that we work on this PFAS issue with trying to minimize blame and try to focus on action and what we're going to do about it. So that's why I bring up the biosolids issue. Nobody wants to feed their kids, though, contaminated dairy and contaminated eggs. And this is all about protecting future generations. So as I talk about the, oh, go ahead.
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, the challenge is there's no naturally occurring PFAS.
No.
So it's man-made, and somebody made it, and somebody profited off it.
Yes, absolutely. And that's a key point here, is we are having to have taxpayers pay the cost of remediation. We're having farmers have to pay the cost of cleaning up their fields. We're having to have all of these things happen while people are manufacturing and using this class of chemicals to really build a profit. And that continues to be an issue in a variety of areas. I'm still running into that with Wolverine. I did an interview yesterday about them still not wanting to clean up areas that they were responsible for dumping in. And so that is the rub of how do we make that, how do we hold people accountable and develop policy moving forward that we don't find ourselves in this for the next PFAS chemical that comes down the pipe, right? Because this was just poor planning on our part, but we don't need to repeat that. So there does need to be some system where polluters are held accountable. Because I don't think your taxpayers want to be held accountable while some industry is making billions off of this.
Well, Ms. Nguyen, right now our taxpayers are being held accountable. The 3M settlements and the other settlements cover 1-3% of the cost to clean up the water supply and our wastewater supply. And 1-3% does not get us very far at all. It's barely a drop in the bucket.
Exactly.
And Representative Hansen.
Just a follow-up. In Michigan, are the wastewater operators required to keep records of where the property is that they're selling the biosolids or giving the biosolids to? I'm looking at the distribution point. Is that recorded in Michigan?
I believe my understanding is that, yes, that is now the case. I don't know that has always been the case. I believe wastewater systems are also requiring pretreatment before industries can basically dump into wastewater treatment systems, and I believe that wastewater is being tested. So I think we're trying to do some things. I think the challenge is the levels that are being considered acceptable in biosolids right now is varying from state to state, and that has people very concerned. Yes.
Chair Hansen, you're good. And then Representative Scraba.
Thank you. Very informative. I get my dogs. I have Boykin Spaniels, and Camden, South Carolina is like one of the epicenters for Boykins. And if you've ever been to Camden, there's a huge DuPont plant there that makes Gore-Tex. So I quickly Googled Camden, and it's in their water system. It's everywhere down there. So pretty much predictable where this stuff is. Somewhere near there is going to have these contaminants. Some of the things that you were speaking to, you know, like blood tests, looking up the blood test thing, and I mean, I just had a blood test the other day, and I'm like, why didn't I get that done? You know, and then you look, and it's like, oh, they're costly. I'm like, okay, they took the blood, they do the test, maybe another minute and a half for someone to do it. Well, I don't know. Again, I'm not a doctor. I don't understand it. But I would think that we, you know, like when we, quote, sued 3M and 3M paid money for cleanup, that somewhere in the future that the blood testing should be part of the lawsuit in the sense that gives anyone in that contaminated area the ability to get a blood test to find out if indeed they, it may not be from there, maybe somewhere they are, but at least it gives them an idea of, I need to fix this. And then, you know, and what I've, the little bit of, that I've looked here, I guide canoe trips. I eat a lot of fish, and I get mercury in me, and you take a drug and take the mercury out of you. You can get these sort of things. Is there any known way of getting the PFAS out of your body once they're in?
Ms. Nguyen.
Let me answer two things. The blood testing issue is a real issue that I'm very passionate about, mm-hmm. because I think it's also important to know that you don't need repeated blood testing. This could be a one and done, because once I knew how high mine was, they do have algorithms that will show you how long it takes to get out of your system. Many of these have an 8-year half-life, for instance. So every 8 years it would go down by half is the theory. So, you know, at this point I'm down to like 1,800 nanograms per milliliter. So I'm like, or I could live forever. I'm also telling myself it's a forever chemical. So yeah. I may have outwitted everybody here.
Pickling yourself from the inside.
I could be.
That might be why I'm aging like fine wine. It could just be I'm turning into plastic. So
yeah.
But I do think the blood testing thing is a huge issue. I'm asking that insurance companies just cover blood testing. If the physician feels that it is an appropriate ask, that insurance companies cover that. That should be a decision between the physician and the patient. And like you said, you know where these hot spots are. That's how Michigan approached it. As far as getting it out of your system, we do know that people who give blood get rid of it faster. Women who menstruate get rid of it faster. There is a cholesterol medication that's an older cholesterol medication whose name I can't remember because I'm old, but it is supposed to be pretty effective, but it has a lot of really hard side effects. The other thing I want to caution people, though, is just because it's out of your blood doesn't mean it's out of your organs, and that's been the other issue that has been of concern to people. There's some brain studies now that I'm becoming a part of and some other studies that people are looking at how this impacts organs as well.
Ms. Nguyen, speaking about blood donation, so let's say you donate some blood, and are the blood centers then filtering those PFAS out, or are we donating PFAS to those that need blood?
I have called the American Red Cross and asked that, and they told me just to wait a few days till the PFAS is out of me, which I think shows the level of misunderstanding that we have across the general medical community on this. So, but here's what I want you to hear. When I've talked to doctors about this, what they've said is when you donate blood, it's really typically given in emergency situations, and it's combined with other blood. It should not be something that stops you. But theoretically, no, we're all kind of sharing our PFAS levels with each other. So,
no, it's the gift that keeps on giving.
The gift that keeps on giving, yes.
Okay.
The other part that I think is important to understand, and the last picture you have on the pictures that I sent you are the kids that were in my neighborhood. I think we counted 22 kids in just on my street when this all happened. Kids that had thyroid disease, kids that were breaking bones, kids that had bone cancer at 9, kids that had parents with kidney problems. I can't tell you how many miscarriages we had on our street. The other piece that's so very concerning about this is that these kids also were very emotionally traumatized by this. They went for 2 summers where you couldn't play in the sprinkler in the summer because the water was contaminated. They couldn't play in a swimming pool in the summer because the water was contaminated. They couldn't grow food in the gardens because the water and soil is contaminated. This is such a big piece when you talk about the cost to your constituents. It's not just the financial cost. It is the cost of medical care. I can't tell you how much it has cost me to lose my husband, even though it's been 10 years. That has cost me emotionally. It cost him, obviously, it cost his family. You don't want your constituents to have to go through that because corporations had to make profits. And that's what this boils down to. I'm not going to go back and argue what happened in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, but today, when you know better, you have a responsibility to do better. And you, as people who are here to protect the health and welfare of your state, have a responsibility to make those tough decisions. So with that, I'm open to other questions.
All right, we're not taking public testimony today, so the rest of the time is for members to ask questions. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for sharing your story, Ms. Nguyen. You've been obviously around in other states, and you know there often are very well-dressed people that come and testify and this or any other committees, and they say, you know, this is a modern world. We just cannot live without this. We have to have it in our chairs or in our vehicles or any of those things. So, you know, then when we do pass things, they come and want to change them, you know, because it's a never-ending battle. Mm-hmm. When you have a success, then the empire always strikes back, right? So what would you say to folks who are saying, you know, well, we have to live with this stuff. We just have to live with it.
Ms. Nguyen.
What would I say? Things come to my head, but I'm not going to say them. I think it's a very callous approach. I think if you, frankly, I'll be blunt, if you prefer money over the health and welfare of your children and your grandchildren, I guess that's on how you sleep at night. I don't think this is something we have to do. I think we can do better. I think I understand chemicals and chemistry is a brilliant thing, and it is nice to have shiny chairs that the water beads off of. It's not nice if you're going to lose your husband. It's not nice if you're going to get thyroid cancer and be in a cancer unit alone because it's during COVID and you can't have anybody with you. It's not nice if you have to worry that your kids are going to get mumps or measles because their vaccines are not working. So I think we can do better. And I think it's a lazy person's way out to say we have to have this because we've always had it and you can't put the genie back in the bottle. The European Union is fighting this as well. It's a global issue, and they're making decisions that we need to be more proactive and we need to be more precautionary before we just allow all these chemicals to be designed and put out there without adequate, independent research on the risks and benefits.
Representative Scrabo.
Hi, Chair. Similar to other issues, when PFAS, we 4 years ago, we were pretty hot and heavy in committee. The airplane fire departments were like, we have nothing to replace it, you know, nothing. And again, humans, when pushed, we can find something, you know. But in the meantime, if everyone knows what you're dealing with, learn the safety way to use it to deal with it. Not saying it's an excuse, like, but we need that type of fire protection. It doesn't make sense not to use it because we can. How we deal with the after effects is what we're figuring out how to do. Part of me is like some of this clothing, some of these shoes, some of these issues. If you're going to make that product, then there should be a chain of use when it's done, where it goes, and perhaps you pay up front when you buy the product to dispose of it properly, if you do dispose of it. Again, that's taking into account everyone knows what it is, and I think a lot of people don't, and they just throw it in the garbage thinking it's normal, even though it's been paid for, even though it has tags and it meant saying, do not do this, do not do that. I'm curious as to where our businesses are, and again, it's one of those, yes, I like having a seat that is dry, preferably, over one that's not. Is this worth it? You know, and that's something society, you know, if we get your message out, or you get your message, more and more people might choose, no, I don't want that. Mm-hmm. And if there's no market, then they won't make it.
Right.
So, you know, this is part of this process. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Ms. Nguyen.
I agree. I think the market can manage this. I think if we had strong labeling rules, many people are aware of this. Many people in our country right now are very much wanting to buy products that are clean and healthy. So I think that is a big piece, labeling. I also am understanding that more and more insurance companies are refusing to cover the cost of lawsuits related to PFAS. That comes back. And that is getting businesses' attention probably quicker than any legislator, no offense. But that is getting their attention quickly, too. So I think that's another way to approach this as well.
And Ms. Nguyen, I think labeling is a great idea. You know, I just did a little Google search. I know Lululemon comes up a lot about PFAS in their clothing, right? So, also came up was brands that do not have PFAS. And I think the market is slowly starting to respond as consumers become educated about how dangerous this chemical is to our personal health and well-being. But a clear labeling would also be helpful so that then the consumer themselves can decide, do I want to ingest this toxic chemical into my body, or do I want to find an alternative?
And I think the challenge with that is that there's so much kind of hiddenness to this that we have to define what PFAS is, because there's a lot of products out that will gladly put PFOA free, but that doesn't mean they don't have the other 14,000 PFAS in there. And so we need a very clear definition of what PFAS is and is not, so that it doesn't give any wiggle room, because I don't want people to also buy something thinking they're doing the right thing and then end up with a chemical or a class of chemicals that's dangerous as well.
And Ms. Nguyen, as co-chair of the Great Lakes PFAS Action Network, is there a definition that your organization is working on, or is there an organization that has a definition?
Many of the organizations, I know Ivana is here somewhere, with Clean Water Action and Ecology Center, Safer States, all of them are working on a definition so that we have one single definition that we would like to have used globally. Okay. Because the other problem is that many of these companies are going to other countries to do their manufacturing and then sending the products here, which doesn't help us either. Right. You know, we're running into the problems. You're a Great Lakes state. Our Great Lakes have this in it. Those are big lakes to have PFAS in our lakes. Uh-huh. We all have a responsibility to care for those Great Lakes. That's a resource that the rest of the world envies us for, and we can't let that get contaminated either.
Thank you. A member's quick time out here. Representative Frederick, would you like to approve the minutes from February 26 when you were vice chairing the committee? Did you read the minutes? Okay, fantastic. I'm glad to hear that. All right, any questions, comments, concerns about the February 26 minutes? No? Okay, seeing none, minutes are approved. And Representative Allen? No, you're good? Okay. Who next has a question? Representative Lilly? No, you didn't. Okay. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this is the Capital Investment Committee where we build stuff, and there's stuff that's going to have potentially PFAS in it. Are there any states that are using their public investment to drive the market by having PFAS-free products included? One, as either the capital side, or we fund in state government a whole university system. We have our prisons. We have all of these things where we use public dollars. And a few years ago, we banned like microplastics in shampoos and things, mm-hmm. some other products. Do you know of any states that are using the power of their public money to drive the market by prohibiting the use of these products?
Ms. Nguyen.
I know in Michigan we do have a procurement policy that prohibits the use of PFAS in our state budgeted things. I will be honest, there has been a lot of concern about how easy that has been to implement and how much that has actually been useful not because it's not a good idea. I think it's a brilliant idea. I think we started it back in 2018 and 19, and I think the knowledge about this has really increased. So we have talked about revisiting that and seeing where that is. But I believe California was working on that as well, but I don't know where they are with that. So I have to be honest, I don't know which states are doing that. I think states have the power, though, to drive this market.
Representative Scrappa.
So the insurance companies tell 3M, tell DuPont, we're not covering you anymore for making these products in the U.S. And they go to Vietnam, they go to China, they go to Pakistan, wherever they can make it. And it still comes back here with the product on it. So what is, have you thought about this? Have you looked at this?
So my understanding.
Ms. Nguyen, we'll go through the chair. So
sorry.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
My understanding is that I know, for instance, in Grand Rapids, we have a lot of furniture manufacturers, and they have begun to look at their products and what kind of, if there are PFAS contained in those products, because there was concern that insurance would not cover them if they were using PFAS, intentionally added PFAS into their products, even if they were purchasing parts of them from other countries. So I'm not an insurance person, and I don't do manufacturing. But I think it's a route to go. I think it's a route to start. I think what it shows me is that insurance companies are very nervous about the liability with this in a variety of ways.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks, Representative Scrabo. Chair Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for coming by to present before the committee. And you know, to the chair, really appreciate your relentless effort on tackling this issue and looking at how could we solve this, you know, for our communities across the entire state of Minnesota. And just a reminder to our committee, you know, last year or the biennium before, we have the Pollution Control Agency look at the costs to Minnesotans, and just looking at our wastewater infrastructure alone, up to $20 billion just to address this issue in the state of Minnesota. And so I really appreciate, you know, you coming by to share your personal story and what you're doing. And I think there's a lot of work ahead of us for our committee and for the entire legislature. And, you know, really excited that we have a bipartisan bill from Chair Franson and Chair Hansen, House File 3322, to look at how we could start addressing some of this issue. And, you know, hopefully we could move forward in having that conversation this session. Even if it's not in the other committee, I think that it's right for us to have a discussion on this committee in the near future. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair Lee. As Ms. Nguyen had said, you know, the government has a right, has the duty to make sure that we are protecting its citizens. And part of that is making sure that our citizens have clean water to drink and clean wastewater. We have so many members in our around the state, our community members that are drinking right now from bottled water or can't even use their shower to bathe. And that is very problematic. And we also have citizens across the state of Minnesota that refuse, that don't want us to have a bonding bill either and want to use it as, you know, leverage against the administration and think that it's really sticking it to them. Well, that's not appropriate, and that's not how we should be doing business when we have communities that are literally have no drinking water in their area and can't even, you know, build their community up because people are like, "Ooh, there's dirty water there. We're not moving there."
Yeah, yes, I completely agree. We've had the same thing. And as somebody who had to go for a year on bottled water, it's a horrible way to try to live. I mean, just cooking with bottled water, all of that. We should not be dealing with this in this country with the amount of infrastructure and the brains that we have. We're smart people. We learned how to do the Macarena. If we can figure that out, we can solve this problem. You know, I have full faith that we can figure out how to solve this problem. We just have to get serious about it and not get distracted.
Well, my grandma, when she was alive, remembers, I remember doing the Macarena with her in her 80s. You know, she wanted to learn how to do the Macarena, and she learned with me. So it is possible. No, we do not. I'll show you later, though. Huh? Any other Vice Chair Fogelman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for coming today. Very sorry for your loss, your husband, and the cancer issues that you've had to go through. Being on this committee has really opened my eyes to the PFAS situation. It also is something that's concerning to me, as my husband and I have a small business that we install septics, water and sewer lines. We also pump septic systems. So I hope that businesses can start being proactive instead of reactive and that we can change this. I think it's something that everybody in actually it affects everybody in the whole world. So it's not like it's just a small thing that's affecting Minnesota. So thank you for bringing more information about this to our committee. I appreciate it.
And I share Vice Chair's attitude there with making the way for Michigan to present to our committee and sharing about the real effects that PFAS has had on you personally and your family. Members, do we have any further comments? Representative Carroll.
Not yet. Thank you, Chair. Question, you kind of referenced it in a circuitous way, but talk about you have Great Lakes, we have Great Lakes, and a lot of other lakes in between. So talk about the runoff and the effect on the lake water.
Ms. Wynn.
Thank you.
Yes, that's a huge issue, I think, for all of us here, because it is this is a very industrial area, the upper Midwest, and so we do have a lot of runoff into these lakes. I think Lake Michigan, Lake Huron, Lake Superior, Lake Erie, I think all five of the Great Lakes have tested with PFAS in them, and that's also affected fishing. We have several areas in the state of Michigan with do not eat the fish advisories in our inner lakes as well as rivers and streams. We have areas in Michigan where you can't eat the deer advisories, especially around military bases. Those seem to be areas that become very contaminated and hot spots. And for Michigan, at least, tourism is a big part of who we are. We love our time on the beaches and fishing and ice fishing and all of that. So to see that start to become impacted, it's this onion that you keep peeling and you finding more and more places. I'm worried about it for that, but also because those lakes often are people's source of drinking water or source of sustenance fishing. And we're taking that from people by not controlling this. And we're not controlling it because we're not turning off the tap. So having states of like Minnesota take lead on that is really key.
Thank you. No, Chair Hansen.
We do, Madam Chair, we do have more scones available, so people can take that. I want to cycle back because I think we interrupted you on the biosolids and agriculture, and I saw something about federally approving PFAS pesticides for emergency use, but I want to go into the inert ingredient question. And so when a pesticide has an active ingredient, it also has inert ingredients, and we don't know what those are. And to make things stick, there's a perception that there are PFAS products in the inert ingredients. Do you have any information or have you thought about that at all?
Ms. Wynn.
I have not thought about that because I think it would keep me up at night. The fact that we would use pesticides full of PFAS on fields of food that we're going to eat defies logic to me. And that's about, I really don't know much about that. It's a very complex chemical, and sometimes I think that science gets in the way of us making just logical decisions about it because we want to make this harder than what it is. I saw that too, that they were allowing that, and I don't think there was anybody I spoke with that was cheering that decision on.
Okay. Any further questions for our testifier who came from Michigan? No? All right. Well, Ms. Wynn, I want to thank you again for making the trip down to Minnesota. And I hope you experienced everything that is Minnesota nice here.
I was telling someone earlier, you guys take Minnesota nice. It's on steroids here. Literally, I've never met such nice people.
Okay, wonderful. It's We'd love to hear that.
Amazing.
And then I hope you take the time to tour our beautiful capital here while you're available. And members, our next meeting will be March 5th, and Chair Lee will hold the gavel. And with that, members, we are adjourned.